Good morning and welcome to Sports Interview with Anne Liguori on this Saturday morning, May 8th. How are we doing this morning? I'm so glad you can join me where I am every Saturday morning from 7 to 8 right here on WLIW 88.3 FM. And if you miss this show live, you can hear it anytime. It's archived on my website at annliguori.com and distributed on podcasts via Audio Boom, iTunes, etc. Lots to talk about in the world of golf. Let's first start with the Walker Cup being played this weekend at Seminole Golf Club in Juneau Beach, Florida. It is the first time the Walker Cup is actually being played in the spring. It's normally in the fall. Well, the organizers down in Florida at Seminole kind of pushed for the competition to take place in May based on the climate in Florida. It's so much better, I guess, course conditions in May. And also, it's not hurricane season. They were worried about, you know, all the rain and all the hurricane warnings that kind of flow through that area in September. So we are seeing the Walker Cup in the spring for the first time ever. And many of you no doubt remember seeing or hearing about the Walker Cup when it was played right in Southampton, New York, at National Golf Links back in 2013. I was there watching. It was so exciting to see the matches and to walk the beautiful course. And the U.S. beat Great Britain and Ireland 17-9 that year. So the format, you know, it features 10 male amateurs from the United States versus 10 from Great Britain and Ireland. It's a two-day golf match comprising of four foursome matches in the morning, followed by a series of singles matches in the afternoon. And a lot of it is similar to the Ryder Cup. There's a total of 26 points, and the winning team must secure at least 13.5 points. The team who comes in as the defending champions in the biennial event retain the cup with 13 points to win. Nathaniel Crosby, the 1981 U.S. amateur champion. Yes, he's the son of the late Bing Crosby. He is the U.S. captain this year and also guided the 2019 team to victory. And Nathaniel played on the winning USA team back in 1983 when they played at Royal Liverpool. And Nathaniel and I have been friends for years. I had the pleasure of playing golf with Nathaniel and his brother Harry at this charity celebrity tournament called the Crosby that their mother, Catherine, organized, which took place in North Carolina for many, many, many years. It was such a wonderful tournament. It raised so much money for charities in North Carolina. And I'll never forget, she put me on Harry and Nathaniel's team. And she was dressed in all white, covering, you know, her fair skin from head to toe, driving the VIPs around in a golf cart, and they watched our matches a lot, our three foursome a lot, because her sons obviously were in that group, and they were so competitive. They were just trying to outdrive each other, and it was really fun to watch the sibling rivalry. And it just showed me how competitive Nathaniel is. He loves to win, and he really makes a real excellent captain for these Walker Cup teams here in the United States. So he's also a member of Seminole, where they're hosting the Walker Cup. So obviously that would be to the team's advantage. He knows the course inside and out. Some of the players who are playing on the American team include Tyler Strafasi, the 2020 U.S. Amateur Champion, John Pach of Scotch Plains, New Jersey, who I remember meeting last year at Wingfoot. He plays for FSU, and he qualified to play in the U.S. Open. He actually finished low amateur and did very, very well at Wingfoot, and I had a chance to talk to him then, and I just really admired his personality, and he's very outgoing, very experienced and composed for his age. So he's going to make a great addition to this team. He played in the 2019 Walker Cup and won all three of his Walker Cup matches. That team defeated Great Britain and Ireland 15.5 to 10.5. And that was also at Royal Liverpool Golf Club in England. Cole Hammer was also on that team. He's competing this year as well. Cole Hammer is a junior at University of Texas. He's competed in 12 USGA championships already, including two U.S. Opens. And just the team is comprised of such talented young men, and I think you would really enjoy seeing it. You can watch Walker Cup matches both on NBC's Peacock channel, which is online, and on the Golf Channel, both today and Sunday. So that will be interesting to watch this young talent, these future professional stars, no doubt. Another story. Remember the Premier Golf League we spoke about last week and last year, really? Well, according to a report this past Tuesday in The Telegraph in the UK, that league, which is going after professionals on the PGA Tour with just huge money offers, well, they're still at it. They got a lot of attention this week. The proposed league would feature 40 to 48 players with a schedule that would include 18 tournaments around the world with lucrative purses and a season-ending team championship. The league is reportedly offering guaranteed money to the players, ownership stakes to some of the players, 10 to 12 of the players who would captain four-man teams. And they're getting huge sums of money. They're, according to the article, representatives for players such as Phil Mickelson, Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka, Justin Rose have gotten huge money offers for their players to leave the PGA Tour and join the new league. Now, I don't think it's going to happen, but just the reports that Phil Mickelson is being offered $100 million to join this new league. And apparently the money is coming from Saudi Arabia, and they are hoping to be in operation next year. Well, Rory McIlroy spoke out about this league last year. He was against it last year. And when he was asked this past week at Quail Hollow, where the PGA Tour is this weekend, he basically said in quotes, "You go back to what happened last week in Europe with the European Super League in football." He said, "People can see it for what it is, which is a money grab, which is fine if that's what you're playing golf for, is to make as much money as possible. Totally fine. Then go and do it if that's what makes you happy. But I think the top players in the game, I'm just speaking my own personal beliefs," Rory said, "like, I'm playing this game to try to cement my place in history and my legacy and to win major championships and to win the biggest tournaments in the world. That's why I'm playing this game." So Rory speaking against this league that is trying to gain some momentum and promoting itself, and also making apparently these offers to agents of these star players. So I know it's really, I mean, can Phil Mickelson turn down $100 million to jump leagues? Golf Digest wrote that the news about the Premier Golf League was mentioned in the meeting, which took place, the PGA Tour players meeting, which took place at Quail Hollow earlier in the week. And Commissioner Jay Monahan had reiterated during that meeting that the PGA Tour and the European Tour, which had joined together in a strategic alliance last November, were united in their position about the league, and that any players who signed with this Premier Golf League would lose their PGA Tour membership. So Monahan, the commissioner of the PGA Tour, has said that previously, that it's either us or them. So just interesting to see how far this Premier Golf League will go to try to lure some of these top stars. I don't think it's going to happen. All right, let's move on. Last week, I was invited to visit Pinehurst Resorts and play several of their storied golf courses. And for those of you who have not been to Pinehurst, the village is so charming, and Pinehurst Resorts is the home of American golf, and it's has such a rich history in golf. The first golf course there was laid out in 1897, and the first championship held at Pinehurst was the North and South Amateur Championship, dating back to 1901. And they continue to hold this championship every year. It's just amazing that this championship has continued all these years. Their best known course is Pinehurst No. 2, designed by Donald Ross, of course. And that was completed back in 1907. It was redesigned through the years, and most recently in 2010 by Bill Corr and Ben Crenshaw. And, but, you know, Donald Ross has been associated with Pinehurst for nearly half a century. In fact, the home that he lived in Pinehurst, which is off the third green area on course number two, has been restored. And I know Pinehurst uses that home for various functions. But with nine golf courses now as part of the Pinehurst Resorts, the options there are limitless. And we played the Cradle the first day we arrived last Sunday afternoon, which is a nine-hole par three course that Gail Hance designed in 2017. It was so much fun, with music playing through speakers that are situated all over the course. And it's just a great way just to kind of relax and enjoy a shorter course, work on your short game and your putting, and listen to great music, maybe have a few cocktails, and just have a good time. We played number two, number four, number eight, and I just have such great memories, you know, covering three U.S. Opens. On number two, of course, the 1999 U.S. Open that Payne Stewart won, that was so special. And who can forget Payne Stewart's dramatic 15-footer for par on the final hole, clinching him his one-shot victory over Phil Mickelson and forever immortalized in that bronze statue of him right there behind the 18th green, his right arm extended in jubilation and his right leg kicked back. And boy, what a special U.S. Open that was for now the late, great Payne Stewart. And I covered the 2005 U.S. Open that Michael Campbell won and the 2014 U.S. Open that Martin Keimer dominated the week after Michelle Wee won the U.S. Women's Open there, with back-to-back U.S. Opens in 2014. So this past week, it was just really nice to be there to play the golf courses and enjoy the ambiance and to take in the history and the beauty of Pinehurst. Number two is very difficult. The Donald Ross original design that Bill Corr and Ben Crenshaw redid in 2010 prior to the 2014 U.S. Opens. Corr and Crenshaw took most of the rough away, but there are a lot of sandy native areas. The difficulty on number two really are the tricky green complexes. Many of the greens are very difficult to hold with their severe slopes unless you place the ball in just the perfect place. And oftentimes your ball rolls off the green and you find yourself putting again from way off the green. So it's truly difficult and challenging, but quite the adventure and certainly worth playing it. My favorite is number four. Gail Hance redid number four back in 2018. I just loved the layout. It's visually stunning. The greens are challenging, but not impossible. And it's just a great, beautiful golf experience for all levels. The USGA announced last fall that they will be establishing a second headquarters in Pinehurst, a Golf House Pinehurst, they are calling it. They're putting in an equipment testing facility there. They're putting in a museum and a visitor center and offices. And Pinehurst will be one of the anchor sites and will host five U.S. Open championships by 2047. The next U.S. Open there will be in 2024, so only a couple years away. So this morning, we are going to get to know more about Pinehurst with interviews that I did with the president of Pinehurst Resorts, Tom Pashley. Tom has been with Pinehurst since 2004, and since then, the resort has grown in so many ways, and we'll talk about Pinehurst and all it has become. We'll also visit with Bob Farron, the chief agronomist at Pinehurst Resorts. He's been at Pinehurst for over 39 years and has been the head of the agronomy program there and USGA Golf Championships. I mean, he's worked on eight USGA championships, including three U.S. Opens, all the Opens I've covered, and the U.S. Women's Open I mentioned. So we'll hear about his history and what it was like working with some of the top golf course designers in the business, from Bill Corr and Ben Crenshaw to Gail Hance. All that coming up this morning on Sports Interview with Anne Liguori. Welcome back to Sports Interview with Anne Liguori, and my guest is Tom Pashley, who is the president of Pinehurst. He's been the president here since 2014, and so great to reconnect. We were talking about seeing each other at the Open Championship at St. Andrews in 2000. Gosh, that was a long time ago. Tom, but thanks for the memories.
Yeah, well, it's great to see you again. It's been 21 years, I guess. But we're glad you're here, and we're glad you're getting to enjoy a little springtime in Pinehurst, as is so many other people. It's amazing to see all the interest in golf, and we're glad you're able to rekindle your relationship with Pinehurst. It's great having you here.
It is so great to be here. As I mentioned earlier, I have covered the 99 U.S. Open here at Pinehurst, the 2005 U.S. Open, the 2014 U.S. Open. So exciting, really, to be here for the U.S. Opens, and many more to come, which we'll talk about in a second. But it's also fun to come and really not have to work, come and play and enjoy Pinehurst as it's meant to be enjoyed, right? So many golfers are here.
So many golfers are here, and what a roller coaster ride we've been on. I think, you know, there was a time there when we weren't sure what was going to happen. But we saw a super busy fall season in 2020. And we were hopeful that that would continue. But, Ann, I've got to tell you, it's blown away every expectation we've had. The number of people who are coming to Pinehurst right now and enjoying being outside, enjoying being together. We can't wait for even more people. As the vaccines continue to roll out, I think more and more people are going to get comfortable traveling. And, gosh, it feels like they're all coming here right now because it's busier than we've ever seen it. But everyone's having a great time. We're able to make sure everybody gets the tee times they need, get the food and beverage that they need. I hope you get a chance to go see the brewery because that's been very popular with this crowd as well.
Yeah, so let's talk about the courses first, then we can talk about the restaurants because the food has been really, really impressive. So take us through the courses, Tom. When people come here to Pinehurst, boy, talk about options.
Yeah, nine 18-hole golf courses plus the Cradle, which is our 9-hole short course. And so, you know, Donald Ross designed, I won't take you through all the designers, but Donald Ross designed the original four courses at Pinehurst, Pinehurst number 2 being his masterpiece where the U.S. Opens have been played. But we also have a Jack Nicklaus course, is our newest course, if you will, Pinehurst number 9 that we acquired back in 2014. So we've got a couple Tom Fazio courses, a Reese Jones course, as well as Donald Ross and Gil Hance. So there's so much variety. And I think what we've seen over the last decade or so has been this resurgence of Pinehurst, interest in Pinehurst. And I think it started with Bill Coore and Ben Crenshaw when they restored Pinehurst number 2. And so that restoration, which happened in 2010, was so well received. I think that helped us also have the decision to hire Gil Hance to come in 2 years ago and kind of redo Pinehurst number 4. And what you'll see and what you've seen is this: Pinehurst is known for the sandy sand hills aesthetic. So you get out, you get off the fairway, and you're not really in rough. You're in sand, you're in wiregrass, you're in pine straw, and sometimes you'll have an amazing lie, and it's a green light. Sometimes you'll be hovering in a pine straw or in a wiregrass bush, and you have very little hope. But the sand hills aesthetic of golf is really unique, and that's one of the reasons people love coming here.
I remember number 2 watching Martin Keimer and Michelle Wee navigate, you know, the redesign that you mentioned with Bill Coore and Ben Crenshaw. And boy, the fairways are very narrow. But as you say, if you're lucky and you actually, if your ball goes into the sandy area, you can hit out of that sandy area. But I just found the greens are just tough. And when I remember Martin Keimer's approach shots at that 2014 U.S. Open, he was so solid, so accurate. He knew where to place the ball, and he was actually able to execute. And then he made the putts. So, I mean, it sounds easy, right? But that's what you have to do. You have to really know where to place the ball on the greens on number 2 because those greens are brutal.
Yeah, they're the inverted saucer or turtleback shape. So people, you know, some people say it's like trying to land a ball on the hood of a Volkswagen Beetle. So sometimes they look larger than they really are. And you're right about Keimer. You know, in 2014, he kind of ran away with it. But if you go back and watch the video, if he did miss a green, which he did miss a lot, but when he did, he putted. So you find yourself in these green surrounds, greens complexes, and you have so many choices of how to play that ball. It could be a 60-degree wedge. It could be a putter. It could be a hybrid, a 3-wood. There's so many options. And sometimes you give golfers too many options and they have trouble committing to one. Keimer committed to using the putter. And I think when people come to Pinehurst for the first time, they're not used to that shot. They're used to chipping from around the greens. They get more grass under the ball. Here, they're pretty tight lies. And so usually the path of the lowest opportunity for making a big number is to go ahead and putt the ball, get it on the green, and go from there.
I just love the history here. Donald Ross, the house here off the third green on number two. And Pinehurst does such a great job in preserving that history with all the photographs and all the memorabilia that you see at the Carolina Inn and here at the clubhouse.
Yeah, the history of Donald Ross is fascinating to study. And if you really are a big Donald Ross fan, Pinehurst is where you have to come, because not only is it our courses, he also designed Pine Needles and Mid Pines just down the road in the Southern Pines Golf Club. So if you love Ross, please come here and learn more about him. He did come in 1900. He came from Scotland to Massachusetts, met the Tufts family that started Pinehurst, and the Tufts family convinced him to come down here to be our first golf professional and architect. And he began tinkering with the golf courses. Imagine, as you probably know, if you see the old photos, the greens back then were just sand. They were more square sand shapes. And after a group would leave the green, they would pull a piece of carpet behind them to smooth out their footprints. So Ross started without a lot of green contour. But then as he built Pinehurst number 2 in 1907, what really got him going was preparing for the PGA Championship, our first major, in 1936. So the greens were converted from sand to grass in 1935, and that's when he began to express himself with these contours and the shapes around the greens. So the Ross legacy in Pinehurst is alive and well, and you see those old black and white photos anytime you go through the Carolina Hotel or the clubhouse. But we're also focused on adding color photos to those hallways as well. So it really is neat that you can kind of walk down an architectural timeline that goes all the way back to Donald Ross, that brings you into the 50s with Ellis Maples. It gets you into the 70s and 80s with Reese Jones and Tom Fazio, and then Nicklaus in the 90s with Pinehurst number 9. So you really get a little bit of everything when you come and play golf at Pinehurst. And then we're going to talk, I'm sure, about the cradle, but the cradle is kind of the new fun thing that we have here with our short course, where after you take yourself as seriously as you as want, playing Pinehurst number 2, Ross's masterpiece, you can kick your shoes off and go listen to some music and grab a drink and play barefoot with just a couple of clubs. It's so fun.
It's so much fun. When we first arrived, we played the cradle. It's a Gil Hans design, built in 2017, 9 holes. And oh my gosh, people were having so much fun. Even if they weren't playing, they were sitting there watching and having a cocktail. And, you know, the music makes it just so light and airy. And it's so much fun, because you need to work on that part of, I know I need to work on my short game. But while you're doing that, you're just having a blast.
Yeah, so the holes range anywhere from 50 yards to 125 yards, and those are a lot of distances that you don't necessarily practice. So when I find myself having to hit a 50 or 60-yard shot, I can go back and say, oh, the fifth hole on the cradle is that same shot, and suddenly I'm not rolling the sod over it and regretting that shot. But no, the cradle has exceeded all of our expectations. It takes just about an hour to play. It's $50, and you can play multiple times for that $50. Like I mentioned, you can go barefoot. It's got the coolest beverage cart in golf. We call it the pine cone, and it sits up there on top of the third green, and you pass it a couple of times while you're playing, and it's got draft beer and all sorts of drinks. And like you mentioned, the music kind of keeps the vibe fun and light, and it's all about fun. You know, and I've seen three generations of golfers playing, with an 8-year-old and then a father and a grandparent. I see a lot of people pushing babies in strollers out there. So the cradle is your best place to have no intimidation. If you want to introduce somebody to the game of golf, you should really do it on the cradle, and watch them just have fun.
So you mentioned the cradle. We talked about number 2, which, when people come here to Pinehurst, number 2, they want to play because of the U.S. Open fame. But what would you say is kind of like the gem or hidden gem that doesn't get as much play, that you just think people really should play?
Yeah, that's a great question, and it's a fun one for us to answer. If I was to go somewhere to just get away from everything and still know that I'm in Pinehurst, I go to Pinehurst number 8. Number 8's Tom Fazio course. It was built in 1995 to celebrate our centennial anniversary, our 100 years. And so I like it because it's away from the main clubhouse and all the hustle and bustle. And there's just so much activity at the main clubhouse. Sometimes it's nice to get away. Other people would say that Pinehurst number 3, Donald Ross. It's another Donald Ross course. It's a par 68, plays 5,200 yards. That's a hidden gem. The greens are the most similar to Pinehurst number twos. They've got a lot of undulation, but they're smaller. And so your short game really has to be on point. But the holes are shorter. So you have, you know, you have multiple drivable holes, and you know that maybe you should probably just hit an iron and play for your par, but you're tempted to see if you can drive the green, and suddenly you're scrambling all of a sudden. So number three kind of gives you the best of the sand hills. It gives you a Ross experience with some sandy wiregrass areas, and you're here at the main clubhouse. So those would be my two hidden gems.
There's so many, right? You want to play all of them. So I have a quick story on number eight. So back in 1999, I was guest of Club Corps and Robert Dedman, and we were both doing a book signing at Tom Stewart's golf history shop in town. You have to see that store if you're a history buff. And after the book signing, Robert Dedman, who, you know, Club Corps back in those days owned Pinehurst, and now this family continues to own the course, correct? Yep. So Robert said, let's go play number eight. And the U.S. Open was going on. And I said, okay. And it was like being with Moses as he parted the Red Sea, as we just walked through these masses of people to get to number eight. And number eight had just been built, I think, right, a year before that. So it was just so special to be able to play number eight with this rock star here, Robert Dedman.
And to be so close to a U.S. Open being played, and it kind of, I guess, is the point I was making. You could have a U.S. Open going on Pinehurst number two with 50,000 people here, and you can escape out to number eight and enjoy the beauty and the serenity. And if I remember correctly, the times I saw Mr. Dedman play, I don't know that I ever had a chance to play with him. He liked to tee it up in the fairway, didn't he? He kind of took wherever it landed, he wanted to tee it up because it was a lot easier to hit it off a tee than it was out of the ground. But you mentioned the Dedman family, and they are the owners of Pinehurst. And the neat thing about them is that they really consider themselves stewards more so than owners. They know that they're taking care of Pinehurst for a future generation. And they've been the ones investing all the resources that have allowed us to make all these exciting changes that we've talked about.
It was just an honor to get to know him, and what a golf mind he had. He took lessons from Harvey Pinnick and had all kinds of stories, you know, that he enjoyed sharing. But let's talk, Tom, about the USGA and them coming here and putting up a golf house here in Pinehurst and having a testing center and a museum and a welcome center. That's big news. How do you think the USGA's presence here in Pinehurst will impact the town?
Well, it takes me back to where you and I first met, as I reminded you in 2000 at St. Andrews. You know, there are special places in the game, and I think Pinehurst has always been one of them, along with St. Andrews and others. But to have a physical presence of our national governing body in Pinehurst, so as you drive into the clubhouse to see their facility there and to know that that's where the golf ball that you're playing has been tested, and the irons and woods that you're playing have been tested for conformity. But it's also where Pinehurst number two exists and where the U.S. Open is played every 5 or 6 years. You know, at St. Andrews, you have the R&A, you have the old course, and you have the Open Championship about every 5 years. So for me, it's this connection back to St. Andrews, and it really just makes a pilgrimage to Pinehurst make all the more sense in the world. It's neat to have U.S. Open Championships, and we're going to have four future ones in addition to the Golf House Pinehurst announcement. And it's neat because every generation of golfers connects with a different player. And to know that every 5 to 6 years, we're going to have the best players in the game and hopefully the best women in the game as well. We had the back-to-back Opens in 14. So I think there'll be other championships in addition to the U.S. Open that'll be contested here. But for us, it's just a great validation that all the things that we've done to evolve and to stay current. Neat to think that Pinehurst number two, that tested the best players in the world in 1907, is still able to challenge the best players in 2024. Speaks to the brilliance of Donald Ross, and just the fact that course can stand the test of time makes us super proud.
And can you, Tom, talk about, you know, some of the changes that we'll see before that U.S. Open in 2024? I know that there's constantly things going on here at the Pinehurst Resort.
Yeah, the cool thing about Pinehurst number two is really I don't think anything has to change. Maybe there'll be a tee box here or there that we don't even know about yet, but it's really, you know, you think of other U.S. Open venues, the fairways get narrowed, the rough gets grown up, and you're playing a golf course that the regular public doesn't see on a daily basis. Pinehurst number two really doesn't need any changing to host the world's best players. Green's got to get a little firmer. Speed's got to get a little quicker around the greens. But other than that, it really is kind of the closest you can come as a player to playing a U.S. Open course every day. Not a lot of changes between now and then.
How about there's going to be some additional rooms put in here near the clubhouse?
Yeah, so that one of the neat things about the anchor site announcement that the USGA made, that Pinehurst is the first anchor site. And as a result of that, we'll host the 29 U.S. Open, 35, 41, and 47. It's not easy to rattle all those off, but
impressive.
I've done it a lot. But that allows us to plan for the future and to do things with a little more permanence. So we're in the process right now of evaluating the concept of building a new hotel that would, oddly enough, be our first hotel with a view of golf. We have three hotels in the Village of Pinehurst. None of them overlook any golf. And so where we're talking about building this hotel would be right on top of the Cradle. You'd have a view of the nine-hole short course we talked about. And we would also like to be able to have a facility there for the players during the U.S. Open. It would be so neat to be able to park in the parking lot as a player, walk straight into this locker room facility, and then they would walk right out onto the tee of the Cradle, which is their U.S. Open practice facility. So we hope that we're able to build this 34-room hotel that we're in the planning stages of right now, and it would be opening probably just in time when we host the 2024 U.S. Open in June.
So you've been here since October 2014. Tom, talk about some of the highlights. I mean, so much has happened with the Pinehurst Resort since you've taken over at the helm here. What's been a highlight for you?
Boy, so I've been the president since then, but I've been at Pinehurst for 25 years. So I am, you know, this place is in my DNA at this point, and I love nothing more than welcoming people here and making sure they find something that they can connect with at Pinehurst. But, you know, the highlights for me, gosh, I go back to in 2014 when we had the U.S. Open. Payne Stewart received the Bob Jones Award, and Tracy was there, and Chelsea's daughter, and they, I've got a photo of Tracy walking over to Payne's statue, and putting her hands on his cheeks and gave him a kiss on the cheek. So the Payne Stewart memories are near and dear to my heart. But I think what's most satisfying to me and what's been the neatest over the last decade or so is we've been able to add so much, and we really haven't lost anything. So we're always aware of what makes Pinehurst special. It's the history and the tradition and the rocking chairs. But at the same time, we're able to do something like I'll go down the Pinehurst Brewing Company path. So we had this great old building that was overgrown. You couldn't even see it behind all the kudzu and the overgrowth. And it was the original steam plant in the Village of Pinehurst where the power was generated. And it's always been part of Pinehurst Resort. And it was decommissioned as a power plant 30 years ago. And it was just becoming a storage unit for us. And Bob Dedman, the owner of Pinehurst, decided he wanted to do something unique in that building, and we turned it into a restaurant and a microbrewery. So we've got some of the best barbecue you've ever had and some of the best IPAs and lagers that you can ever have. And so for me, it's that constant evolution and looking at things that we can add without taking anything away is what's been most enjoyable.
Yes, I think maintaining that charm, as we talked about before, is just so special. And to sit on those rocking chairs, whether you're here at the clubhouse overlooking, you know, some of the golf courses or at the Carolina Inn and sitting there, you know, having a cup of coffee or, you know, anybody who, you know, would smoke a cigar, just sitting on that wraparound, you know, porch is very, very special. And then, you know, just strolling through town. We took bicycles this morning and rode around and ran into people we know. It's such a small town. You know everybody, right? Is there anything that you yet have to do here? I mean, there's been so much progress since 2014. Is there anything yet that you want to do that you haven't?
Well, we haven't mentioned the spa, which we do have a great spa. So we encourage everybody who enjoys that type of thing to come here and enjoy our wonderful spa. You know, so what's next? The great news is, in addition to this, you know, normally it'd be a future U.S. Open, but now that we've got an abundance of those, we're so fortunate. The neat thing that we have is we have land, and we have about 1,000 acres, Ann, that we've owned for 20 years or so, and Bill Coore and Ben Crenshaw have routed a golf course on paper down there. But I would tell you, you know, now more so than ever, with the popularity that we're seeing in the resurgence of golf right now, we're spending more time wondering about what is the future of golf at Pinehurst. And we've got the nine courses plus the Cradle, which is kind of half a course, but it's probably time to be thinking about double digits and finding out what's the next golf course at Pinehurst going to be. And Bill and Ben, again, have routed a golf course there, and they love the land, and it's got some neat topography. Part of it is on land that used to be a golf course called The Pit. So it was a kind of a sand mine, and there's a lot of interesting movement to the land down there. So I think we're going to spend a lot more time this year deciding what's the next chapter of golf at Pinehurst.
So there'll be a number 10.
Well, Ann, I didn't say that. You know, this is, it's not a breaking news, but you know, we've got the land, and we've got ideas, and now it's more about the need. You know, we've been waiting for the time, and again, I think it's because of what we're seeing in the marketplace right now, that people are playing golf, and we're fortunate to be on there on the bucket list, which actually I kind of don't like being on your bucket list, because that implies a one and done. You know, we say we don't want to be on your bucket list. We want to be on your annual trip list, because there's so many different ways and times you can come here. But yeah, not a breaking announcement, but more discussion about number 10.
Well, I appreciate that. That's always good to have discussion announcements on the show. Tom Pashley, president of Pinehurst, thank you so much, and continued success. And it's been real fun being here this week, and hope to come back more often when I'm not working.
Well, thank you for being here, and thank you for sharing all the great things that are happening here with your audience. It's great to rekindle our relationship. Hope you enjoy the rest of your stay.
Thanks so much. Welcome back to Sports Interview with Ann McGorry, and my guest is Bob Farron, the Director of Agronomy here at Pinehurst. He's been the Director of Agronomy since 2000, but has been here at Pinehurst since 1982. Boy, Bob, you are part of the family for sure here at Pinehurst.
I've certainly had a great run here, and it's part of my DNA being here, and I've seen a lot of changes and a lot of improvements made over the years.
What has struck you the most as far as changes here since 1982?
Well, the fact that we are continually changing. We made a lot of changes, especially after Club Court bought it in 84, made a lot of capital improvements and built new golf courses. We opened number 7 golf course in that time frame, and then our centennial course number 8 in 95. And continually improving varieties of turf that we use and the concepts and construction of everything. So it's been a great close to 40 years with so many different architects and people that are knowledgeable of the game and love the game. That's the key, the people that love the game, and they're here to play because they love it.
You have certainly seen it evolve since 1982, and you've worked with some pretty well-known architects, right? I know Bill Coore and Ben Crenshaw restored number 2. What was it like working with them, and how involved do you get when you work with these architects?
I was very much involved with Bill Coore and Ben Crenshaw with course number 2, and it was such a process and such a respect they had for the ground and for the design of course number 2. And they realized and was able to point out a lot of changes over the last 30 years of the improvements that I had made as we were creating and meeting the wishes and expectations of our guests and members in the 80s and 90s. They expected and appreciated a different golf course than what it was in the 30s and 40s. And golf changed over those years, and the expectations of the golfers did. But Bill especially, and Ben, because Ben had played competitively on it a number of times, they could point out to me the changes that had been made as well as I could know. I would know what phases of irrigation we had added and all the changes that we had made. So we're really lifting off each of those layers of those changes of the 80s and 90s, because it was a different concept. And the thing I remember the most, I think, that really gained they gained my respect beyond their knowledge of golf. They certainly couldn't question that, but they actually, as we were talking about these changes that had been made, I would say something like, well, we put, you know, set 600 heads of irrigation addition in on these years, so we were taking those all out. And one day Ben looked at me and said, Bob, you've been part of all these changes. And I'm like, yeah. He said, well, and you're embracing what we're doing, but we want to make sure that we're not stepping on your career. We're wiping out your entire body of your work. And I'm like, that's great. We're going to do what the golf course dictates. And that's what we did. And the people, myself included, and everyone else had confidence in what they were doing. And it was just a wonderful, wonderful experience.
What kind of changes were made? What were the major changes when they came in and kind of renovated it?
Well, as we were walking through it, and again, highlighting and noting those changes that have been made, our goal was to take it back to what it was in 1935 or 40, in that era when Donald.
What did they have to do?
We went out and marked all the changes that we made. The turf we added, we took it all away. We took away 35 or 40 acres of turf that had been added over the years, and exposed the native areas and the sandy areas, which was really the what part of number two golf course, what made number two golf course. But the really telling piece that we found as we were starting, and they were learning more about it and kind of taking baby steps, if you will. We were able to discover a photograph from 1943 that showed an aerial photograph with great accuracy. And it was exactly as they were thinking it should be. And then we had a lot of confidence and we took off from there.
So how did the players react to those changes? I mean, I guess some of them were too young to know the difference, but what was the reaction for the 2014 U.S. Open that Martin Kaymer won and Michelle Wee won for the U.S. Women's Open?
I think the ones that embraced the change played really well. The ones that were opposed to it, and there were some vocal that did not like it, and very few of them even made the cut. But
it's all a mindset, right?
But it was unlike any U.S. Open setup ever. And that was one of the points that Corin Crenshaw made, and Mike Davis with USGA played a big part in all the process of changes as we were making them. Corin Crenshaw had a concern that we would do these changes. This was in 2010. And then the USGA would come back in and undo them for the championship. But that was not the case. They assured us from day one, this is what we want, and that made a big difference.
How much were the greens changed, if at all, when they came in and refurbished it?
The greens were essentially untouched. We regrassed them, but we didn't change any contours, with the exception of the 15th and 17th greens, the par threes. We had lost over the years some hole locations around the edges that we restored. Those are the only changes. We came back in after the championship and created a new hole location on the front right of the sixth green. So all the par threes were really the only changes we made, and they're so subtle that very few people would even realize that.
What about the turf? When did you go from bent to Bermuda, Bob?
We did that right after the 2014 championship. They were still bent grass for the 14 championship.
And what's the difference when you change from bent to Bermuda?
Well, the ultra dwarf Bermuda, it withstands. We can have championship level playing conditions 12 months a year, 52 weeks of the year. With the bent grass surfaces, they tend, regardless of what kind of management regime you're on, June, July, and August are struggles, especially July and August. They struggle. They struggle in the sense of what we want to provide as a challenge, firm and fast and all that, that they just simply can't hold up to that conditioning. But with the ultra dwarfs, we're able to do that every week of the year.
So you worked with Bill Coor and Ben Crenshaw. Boy, that must have been an adventure, right? Any fun stories working with these guys? You said they obviously pay a lot of attention to detail and to the history of the golf courses, knowing what used to be, and obviously trying to restore these golf courses into what they were like from the original Donald Ross designs.
I think I would go back again and say the respect that they showed for it. They weren't interested in leaving their footprints on it. They wanted it to be what Ross had. And the amount of respect they had for that impressed me a great deal. But the coolest thing was Bill especially. He likes to just walk. Never would go out in a cart. We would have site visits that would go on all day long. And we would walk and walk and walk. And we did a lot of the project when the course was open. And when Bill and I were out there, a group that usually be three or four of us, Mike Davis on some days, and it was all fine. But when Ben was with us and the course was open, anytime we would stand on a tee and go, and groups would come through and they would recognize him, and then they would be like nervous, right? I mean, they wanted to meet Ben, and of course he loved engaging with them. And we were like, come on, Ben, we've got work to do. But he would stand there and talk to them for hours if he had time. But that was one of the things I remember the most. And we would stand and take bets on what golfer may hit the green or not on a par three. And that would amp up the nervousness of the players themselves.
That sounds like a lot of fun. So having been here since 1982, Bob, has your appreciation for what Donald Ross originally created, has it gotten even more so, just having been here for so long and seeing what he originally did here so long ago?
Yeah, an appreciation for it for sure. The more I've learned about it, especially the last 20 years, let's say, the more I appreciate it, and the more basic and fundamental what he did in the Sandhills and how he was able to do it here. It's pretty amazing. Now, to be honest with you, when I came here in 1982, basically right out of college, you know, I had no appreciation for it at all. But it's one of the things, the more you learn about it, the more you appreciate it. Right. And it absolutely goes for course number two.
Right. And your thoughts about the way Pinehurst kind of preserves Donald Ross's legacy and history, and keeps the photos out, and really you walk around the lodge and you walk around the clubhouse and you see so many pictures and tributes to the great Donald Ross.
And I think those are the things, and the more we're able to visit with people and talk with our guests and our members, again, just like me, the more you know about it, the more knowledgeable you are, the more you appreciate it. And I think us being able to share all those photographs and things in the hallways, whether it initiates conversation or not, or people's opinions or interest, but the more they become interested, the more knowledgeable they'll be and appreciate it.
So then Gil Hance comes in, and he built the Cradle in 2017. And I know you worked closely with Gil Hance. And how would you describe the difference, perhaps, between, say, Gil Hance and Crenshaw and Coor?
You know, very little difference, to be honest with you. But I would say the similarities are so that they like to be on the ground and doing things. They're not so much about taking out a set of plans and architectural plans and detailed drawings and all that. They really want to be on the ground, in the dirt, if you will. And that's the way they approach it. And it's kind of unnerving at first until you get to understand that, because I'm kind of a numbers guy and like to plan this and have everything in my little box. But not those. You have to learn just to kind of roll with it. But when we were doing the Cradle, we had already decided to have Gil do number four golf course that fall. So the Cradle really and truly was, we were able to develop a relationship with him, get an understanding of what he, how he worked and what his driven desires were. And So we got to know him really well before we even started number four. So that was a blessing for us.
And how about Tom Fazio with number eight? I remember playing number eight with none other than the rock star himself, Robert Dedman. And that was just such a delight. And we're going to play it again this week. But boy, to go to number eight and have a completely different designer and experience. One of my favorite designers, Tom Fazio.
Working with Tom Fazio was wonderful at course number eight. You know, it was a complete virgin site, the old site of the gun club. And one of the things that strikes me really when we were just marking center lines on course number eight, which is where you go down through the woods and cut a swath 6 feet wide, just wide enough to walk the center lines after the engineers put turning points in. They'll put a T-post in and another post at the turning point of the fairway. And I'll never forget walking down the fourth fairway with Tom, and he had the engineer, the surveyors with us. He said, this post is in the wrong spot. And I'm thinking, well, that's really, this guy's engineered it, and you're walking on the ground, you can't see 20 feet on either side, and you're telling him that, or asking him to, you're questioning that. And sure enough, they came back, and it was about 30 feet off of where it should be. And I asked him, I said, that blows my mind. That you can tell, how can you tell that post was off? He's like, well, I'm supposed to be able to stand here. The idea is stand here and see over the third green, or the fourth green, excuse me. The fourth green, you should be able to see the pond down there behind the green, and you can't. But if you get it up here at this elevation, you can. And that's how he designed it, but they laid it out wrong in the field. So when you play over there, on the fourth hole, to keep that in mind when you get up there.
And it's great he remembered that, right? Just by being there. So you had Alice Maple designing number five in the 50s and 60s. Then George Fazio was the original designer of number six. Then Tom came back in, right, to redesign that. And number seven, Reese Jones. So when you look at this, you know, really the whole body of work at Pinehurst, you have a number of, you know, some of the greatest course designers on the planet.
He has a great heritage in each of them. Actually, Tom worked with his uncle George on number six originally, and then he came back in and made some changes for us in the early 2000s. But as far as Reese is concerned, his father, Robert Trent Jones, had redesigned course number four in the 60s and 70s. So when Reese came in 82, that's when I first started to work here. It was closed, and Reese was working on it at the time. So he was working on his father's creation then, and then he came back in and did number seven for us in 84 and 85.
And they all have different personalities, right? But you've worked with all of them, except for maybe the older guys, Donald Ross, Allison, and Robert Trent Jones Sr., maybe. But
yeah, I did meet him with Reese one day on number seven. But they do have their own personalities. But the commonality they have is their love for golf and love to create something that people enjoy. It's a thing of beauty. I mean, really and truly, a golf course is.
How about, I know it's like choosing your favorite child, but which course do you like to play more than any other?
On any given day, it would be different course. But I think if I were going to wake up and play golf 3 or 4 days a week, I would probably choose course number one. It's an old throwback course. Very little has been done as far as earth moving since Donald Ross, since back in the early 1900s. And it's a very playable, very walkable course. So that would be my choice, I guess.
What's the highlight of being here for so long for you?
That would be two. I couldn't name it. So many of them are built on one, built on the other. But I would have to say working with Bill and Ben on course number two, I learned more about that, and I gained that much more appreciation for it. That would have to be one of them. The 99 U.S. Open speaks for itself because that was a first. The back-to-back Opens in 14 were off the chart. I think from an accomplishment perspective, based on what people thought might happen or could happen, all the worst-case scenarios, we read about them and heard them from media for several months, and it couldn't have turned out better. I mean, it's just absolutely phenomenal. We were very fortunate with the weather. It cooperated. It could have been not so good. And we had two great champions. And to have Michelle Wee finish with that champion with the Women's Open, that was pretty special.
And now how to prepare for the 2024 U.S. Open and all the other ones that Pinehurst is going to get as they've become, you know, one of these permanent host sites.
Well, the interesting thing for 24 is going to be, as we're looking at it, we know there's three or four more U.S. Open championships in the future. So as we develop facilities and with the USGA team of building things, that knowing that we're going to be back here in 6 years, what can we do differently? And I think that's going to be a great challenge as well.
Thank you so much, Bob Farron, the Director of Economy here at Pinehurst. Really appreciate your hard work.
Well, thank you so much. It's awesome to talk with you and visit with you. I hope you enjoy your time here.
Hope you enjoyed this edition of Sports Interview with Ann Liguori. My thanks to Pinehurst Resorts for hosting me, to Tom Pashley, Bob Farron, Alex Poligar, Shane Sharp, and to Delaney Hefner in the studio. Have a wonderful weekend, everybody. Stay safe, stay well, be nice, and I'll talk to you next Saturday morning right here on Sports Interview with Ann Liguori.